We join in prayer. May the words of my lips and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. These signs will accompany those who believe. By using my name, they will cast out demons, speak in new tongues, pick up snakes in their hands, and if they drink any deadly thing, it will not hurt them. They will lay their hands on the sick, and they will recover. So to the last in the series about the different aspects of the faith of Easter, that has included the doubts of Easter, the presence of Easter, the politics of Easter, and today, the dance of Easter. And it's coincided with the celebration of the songs of the carols of Sidney Carter, the one we've just heard, of course, and then supremely after, in just a few minutes' time, as we stand to sing together Lord of the Dance, perhaps one of the best known of all. A brilliant metaphor for the work of God, dancing in the morning, in the beginning of creation, dancing through Galilee, dancing even though it meant crucifixion, but dancing back to life afterward and leading anyone who follows in the dance. Now, I'm not much of a dancer. Oh, I used to strut my stuff in my teenage years in the discotheques of the Midlands. I even tried learning things like the waltz and the foxtrot at one time. It was not a pretty sight. Neither were Cheryl's feet afterwards. But dancing, glorious. All around the world, in just about every age, men and women have danced and dance still. The passionate tangos and salsas and flamencos of Spain and South America, ritual dancing, break dancing, finger dancing, as we have seen. Morris dancing, maypole dancing, line dancing. The exuberant free dancing of the E-Day as the joy of an end to war broke out. Liturgical dancing, dancing in worship. You know all about that here at Tyndale through the ministry of the Tyndale dancers over many years. Though it has not always been everywhere accepted. When one of the Tyndale dancers, Pam Fisher, came to the Baptist College when I was there in the 1980s to demonstrate liturgical dancing, and she wore her leotard, well, quite a few of us felt quite queasy, and one student even had to leave the room. Dancing? In church? Often enough, it has been banned, but not always. The Shakers, that Puritan group that began in Manchester and then became established in Massachusetts in the United States, that group known for its very austere style of dress and morality and its very simple furniture that is much copied today, and you can buy very expensive versions of Shaker furniture in some of the most expensive furniture shops. That group that kept men and women strictly separated in its worship services made dancing a mainstay of all that they did before God. Sidney Carter adapted one of their tunes for Lord of the Dance. He said he wanted to pay tribute to them, but also thought that the metaphor of dance was just right for Christianity. He had another Christian song in mind as well when he wrote, apparently, "Tomorrow is my dancing day." But he also had a model of the Hindu god Shiva in dancing pose on his desk. Dancing is deeply embedded in the human spirit and just as deeply embedded in human reflection on God. And why? Well, maybe because dancing, well, it doesn't do anything. It doesn't make us better people or feed the hungry or clothe the naked. And while we're dancing, you could say we are wasting valuable working time or helping time. Dancing isn't about doing anything, but it is perhaps about being. And that is what it has to do with the life of God, who just is before ever he does or makes anything. God just is for the sheer joy of existing, of being. And that's how it is for us when we dance, or maybe when we watch Strictly Come Dancing, or enjoy, as we shall in a few moments, singing Lord of the Dance. And for those moments, our problems fade into perspective. The outcome of elections, the challenges of governing a country and so on, all the sufferings of the world in Christian Aid Week. We are just dancing, reveling in the sheer joy of being alive. Picasso painted his little sketch, La Ronde de la Jeunesse, in 1936, at the outbreak of the Spanish Civil War. He said to express, he was a pacifist, but he said to express his joy in life, just as joy was being snuffed out. At Easter, we reflected on the short ending of Mark, the end just before the start of today's reading, with that enigmatic verse, "For they were afraid." As we reflected on the sheer terror of meeting a dead human being who had come back to life again. But it couldn't be left there, really. Matthew's Gospel and Luke's Gospel and John's Gospel give us complete rounded endings to the story of Jesus. And eventually, it seems, they came round to finishing off Mark's Gospel as well with a more complete ending. Maybe 100, 150 years later, no one's exactly sure. Once the church had begun to spread, someone sat down and tried to sum the whole thing up. What had happened? How Jesus had appeared after he had risen? What he had sent his followers out to do? Where he had gone? And it ends, "They went out and proclaimed the good news everywhere, while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the message by the signs that accompanied it." Now, the scholars still wrangle as to exactly who wrote this ending to Mark's Gospel and how it exactly relates to the rest of the Gospel and exactly when it was written and so on, and how it came to be attached to Mark in the first place. But one commentator puts it very well, I think. "This passage is full of the atmosphere of the first century. The past, they say, is a different country. It is difficult for us to enter into the world of the first century AD in our rational, skeptical, materialistic age, a world that was bounded by low life expectancy, in which people were surrounded by dangers and fears of all kinds, in which they were at the mercy of illnesses and insecurities, and there was not a social care scheme or a health care system or an insurance policy in sight. But this was the world in which the faith of the risen Christ began to spread, in which Christians began to proclaim a message of good news for all the world, as I say. It is not our world. It was a world of poisonous snakes, a world of demons lurking behind every bad thing that happened, in which folk were at the mercy of every airborne and waterborne disease you could name. And in such a world as this, good news was proclaimed. Snake bites that won't kill, drinks that do not poison, demons that are cast out by a name, healing at the touch of a hand. Good news in such a world. That's how they described what had been going on at the end of Mark's gospel. Not much point all these centuries later in us trying to exactly copy what went on, though some try. You may have heard of that small Christian group in the Appalachian Mountains in Virginia who go in for handling poisonous snakes in their services of worship. Where God is praised when the bites don't cause any trouble. Not that they don't cause trouble. And several pastors of those churches have died in recent years, and the picture seems to be that gradually the practice is dying out. But we have lived through the best part of 30 years in which expecting things to happen today, exactly as they did all those years ago, seems to have become almost mainstream. There are today whole ministries devoted to exorcism of demons and to healing of the sick from all manner of diseases by miracles. And it is as if medicine and doctors and healthcare were of no avail. But that brings us back to the metaphor, to dance. To think of all that was going on back then as the good news began to spread as a kind of dance. As the followers of Jesus began to dance through a dangerous world, they did not let anything stop them. Not demons, not snakes, not poisons, not illnesses. And they found that the life of the risen Christ led them to dance, to revel in the sheer joy of being alive in a world where often it was a struggle just to get through each day. And down all the centuries, Christians have discovered and rediscovered what the risen life of Christ means, to live for the sheer joy of living, to dance God's dance in a world bound by superstition, or racked by division, or mired in racial hatred, or knocked sideways by extreme ideologies of one kind or another. To dance. Now, often it has cost everything to dance in such a world. When no one else is dancing, the dancer is often the subject of ridicule and persecution. And the snake-handling pastors in America are certainly the object of a great deal of ridicule. For daring to believe and to proclaim and to live as if illness or poison or the demonic or the political or the racial or the sexual or whatever force is dragging us down does not have any power. Our world, as much after as before this recent election, is still in need of such good news. It has been, and it will still be, dragged down by things that appear to hold great power. But we are called to believe and to proclaim that the power and the authority lie ultimately, gloriously, and endlessly with God through the risen, endless life of Christ, who has danced through the world from the beginning, who danced out of the grave, and who is dancing still, reveling with the sheer joy of life, the very life of God, and who calls us to join the dance. we sing Lord of the Dance.